Willed part of her had wondered how she could possibly contact him, if she wanted to. The answer had come swiftly. Email. Of course. Mirthan@druid.com. She'd had the means to contact him all along. After a moment, she raised her head and returned her gaze to the display. Her laptop battery was dead and she had no adapter, so she'd waited until she was certain the castle was asleep before leaving her makeshift bed on the landing, winding down the echoing stone corridors and booting up one of the three computers in the Keltar library. She had over 100 new emails. 42 of them were from Lucan Trevane. He'd been trying at periodic intervals to reach her again since that night in the hotel. His earlier efforts had no subject line. The more recent emails were captioned with blatant taunts. Do you love him, Jessica? Are you ready to watch your Highlander die? You can save him. Would he let you die? Would he give up on your life? Buy time, Jessica. Live to fight another day. Such a juvenile ploy, and so damned effective. All she had to do was open an email to open communications. She had no doubt that back at his residence in London, or perhaps no more than a few miles down the road, somewhere between the castle and Inverness, Lucan was monitoring a computer, waiting for the moment she did so. Waiting for a mere yes to keep Kian alive. At what cost? Her stomach felt sick.
You can see him as he is, can't you, lass?
Kian had asked as he steered her back into the castle. She nodded, tears threatening, for she'd known exactly where he was going.
I am the only one who can stop him, Jessica.
Yep, right where she thought he was going.
I am all that stands between that monster and that monster gaining unlimited power.
I don't need a crash course in ethics, Kian, she'd snapped. She'd instantly regretted her tone and words. They had so little time left. She'd sworn to herself that she would not make a moment of it ugly, that she would not vent her rage and frustration and grief on him, that she would save her ugliness for later, when she'd already lost all she had to lose. That now she would give her strong, determined, noble Highlander the only gift she had to give him, perfect days and perfect nights. A small, perfect lifetime in no time at all.
I'm sorry,
she'd said softly.
Nay, lass, 'tis I who am sorry,
he'd replied, drawing her into his arms.
'Twas I who should have told you from the—
Don't.
She'd pressed her finger to his lips.
No regrets. Don't you dare. I have none.
A lie. They were eating her alive. Regret that she'd not slept with him that first night in the hotel room, knowing what she now knew. Regret that she'd not stayed that first night in Professor Keene's office and summoned him out then, and gotten to have more time with him. Regret that she was such a coward. That she couldn't say, "Screw the world, let them fend for themselves against Lucan. Let somebody else save everybody's ass. Not my man. What about me?" She bit her lip hard, staring at the screen, reached for the mouse, pulled away, reached again, her finger hovering above it. Even without contact, she could feel the chill. Her choices. Lose Kian by letting him die to kill Lucan, or lose Kian by betraying him, by allying with his enemy to keep him alive. Either way, she'd lose him. And if she kept him alive, he would surely hate her.
I can't do it,
she whispered, shaking her head. A few moments later, she powered down the computer and left the library. As the door closed behind her, from deep in the shadows, concealed behind a velvety drape, Dagus watched the display go dark and sighed. Earlier that day, after Lucan had gone, Jessica had cornered Dagus as he'd been hurrying, unnoticed, he'd thought, in the back entrance to the castle, in an attempt to avoid contact with Kian, as he'd been doing for several days now, unwilling to risk his powerful ancestor trying to deep-read him.
Dagus, do those ancient people, the Dragaar inside you, know anything? Is there any way to save him?
She'd asked, her face wan, her jade eyes dark with grief. He'd drawn a deep breath and given her the same answer he'd given Drustin when, a few days ago, his brother had asked him the same question.
"Nay, lass," he'd lied.
Chapter 26
Memory. Day 9. Kian and I were married today. It wasn't anything like I used to imagine my wedding would be, and it couldn't have been more perfect. We wrote our own vows and had a private ceremony in the estate chapel. When it was over, we scribed our names in the Keltar Bible on thick ivory parchment edged in gold. Jessica McKelter, wife of Kian McKelter. Drustin, Gwyn, and Chloe stood as witnesses, but Dagus wasn't feeling well, so he couldn't come. Kian is my husband now. We had a wedding breakfast of cake and champagne and honeymooned a long, rainy day away in a big four-poster bed before a roaring fire in a magnificent 500-year-old Scottish castle. His vows were beautiful, so much better than mine. I know the McKelters thought so, too, because Gwyn and Chloe both caught their breath and got teary-eyed. Even Drustin seemed affected by them. I wanted to say the same thing back to him, but Kian refused to let me. He got really funny about it. He placed his hand on my heart and mine on his. It was so romantic. And he said, "If aught must be lost, 'twill be my honor for yours. If one must be forsaken, 'twill be my soul for yours. Should death come anon, 'twill be my life for yours. I am given." The words gave me chills through my whole body. God, how I love the man. Memory. Day 8. We decided on names for our children this morning. He wants girls that look like me, and I want boys that look like him. So we decided to have 4, 2 of each. I'd settle for 1, so if anyone's listening up there, I'd settle for 1, please. Memory. Day 5. Damn the man, he asked me not to be there when it happens.
Jesse didn't see it coming. The conversation began innocuously enough. They were lying in bed in the silver chamber, Kian stretched on his back, Jesse sprawled blissfully sated on top of him. Her breasts were pillowed against his hard chest, her legs were parted across one of his thighs, and every time he moved the slightest bit she got a delicious residual tingle from the orgasm she just had, and her face was pressed into the warm hollow where his chest met his neck. They'd been making love for hours, and had just been laughing about how they wanted to go raid the kitchen, but neither of them had the strength to move. As their laughter died, there was one of those long moments that stretched uncomfortably. They'd been occurring more and more often of late, as there were so many things both of them were being excruciatingly careful not to say.
"What if we broke the mirror, Kian?"
she blurted into the strained silence.
"What would happen?"
He cupped the back of her head, threading his fingers into her curls.
"The glass is but my window, or door, if you will, on the world, Jessica. The actual unseelie prison I inhabit exists in another realm. I would be trapped inside that unseelie place, with no way out. Then, when the tithe was not paid, both Lucan and I would die. He in your world, I in a windowless broch of stone."
She shuddered, hating that image.
"If you knew that breaking the mirror was a sure way to keep Lucan from passing the tithe through, why didn't you do it before you ever came to Chicago?"
"Oh, lass, prior to meeting you, I had no one to summon me out, or I might have. I attempted to persuade the thief to release me, but he thought he was going mad, and crated the mirror up. After that debacle, I concluded mayhap 'twould be wiser to let time and distance separate me from Lucan. Trevane searches constantly for relics of power, and has many contacts. I knew not which merchants might have ties to him, and feared if I continued showing myself, word might get back to him, and he would succeed in reclaiming the mirror before Samhain. Then, once I'd met you, I had to be able to leave the glass in order to protect you. 'Twas why I was so concerned it not be broken, so you would not be left defenseless.'"
He paused, then added softly,
There was also the small fact that I never wanted to live more greatly than I did the moment I saw you, lass. For over 1,000 years, life had meant naught to me but vengeance. Then the moment my vengeance was at hand, life suddenly meant everything. 'Twas a bitter pill to swallow.
Jessie was choking on the bitterness of that pill herself. As each precious day slipped by, as Drustin and Dagus continued to shake their heads and say they'd still not found a way to save him, so too did her grip on herself slip. Kian might have accepted his death as a necessity, but she never would. Each night, at some point, she ended up in the darkened library, sitting in front of the computer, her hands clenched in her lap. The past few nights she'd not even dared to turn it on, because each day she was weakening. Ethics? What were ethics? She wasn't even sure she could spell the word. Wasn't in any dictionary she knew.
What if it was broken when you were outside it?
She pressed.
The same. 'Tis not the mirror I'm actually reclaimed back into, but that place in the Unseelie realm. When whatever hours of my freedom I was allotted that day expired, I would be returned there again, with no way out. Again, as the tithe could no longer be paid at Samhain's end, we would die.
Oh, for God's sake!
She cried, pulling away from him. Sitting up, she punched the mattress with a fist.
I'm surrounded by magic! The three of you are druids! On top of that, you're a sorcerer, and Dagus was possessed by 13 ancient evil beings! Don't any of you know a spell or enchantment or something that can undo this stupid indenture?
Kian shook his head.
One would think so, but nay. The Keltar were chosen to protect Seelie lore, not Unseelie. Though some of us are wont to dabble with things best left alone, we ken very little of the ways of dark magic, even less about the darker half of the Tuatha De Danann.
There has to be another way, Kian.
He sat up and grabbed her by the shoulders, his whisky gaze fierce.
Och, Christ, lass! Do you think I wish to die? Do you think if there were any other way to stop Lucan that I would seize it? I love you, woman. I would do anything to live. But the simple fact is, 'tis my very life that keeps Trevane immortal, and nothing but my death can take that away from him. In time he will find the Dark Book. He cannot be permitted to have that time. 'Tis not merely our lives at stake. 'Tis the lives of many. 'Tis the very future of your world. I can stop him now. Before long, no one will be able to.
And you can't live with that,
Jessie said, unable to keep the note of bitterness from her voice.
You have to be the hero.
He shook his head.
Nay, lass, I've never been the hero, and I'm not trying to be one now. 'Tis but that there are things a man can live with, and things he can't.
He took a deep breath, exhaled it slowly.
I told you I was tricked into the mirror, and that much is true. But I didn't tell you that I wanted the Unseelie dark glass, too.
Jessie went very still.
Why?
Was he finally going to tell her what happened to him so long ago?
Lucan and I were once friends, or so I thought. I later learned he was naught but subterfuge and deceit from the beginning.
Didn't you do that deep listening thing to him?
Kian nodded.
Aye, I did, for my mother cared not for the man. But when a surface probe yielded nothing, I didn't push. I arrogantly thought myself so superior in power and lore that I didn't deem Lucan a significant threat. I couldn't have been more wrong. I didn't know that he'd sought me out deliberately to get the dark glass, or that he was born a bastard, sired by an unknown druid father on a village whore, and had been shunned all his life by other druids. They refused to teach him, refused him entrance to their inner circle. What lore Lucan had managed to acquire before we met had been gained through violence and bloodshed. For years he'd been systematically capturing and torturing lesser druids for their teachings. Even more powerful ones had begun to cede him wide berth. but he couldn't overwhelm and take captive a druid who knew the art of voice, and he needed that art desperately. He learned of me somehow, and came to Scotland, to my mountains, where, isolated from so much of the world, I'd not heard of him. I learned later all of Wales, Ireland, and much of Scotland had heard tales of this Lucan Merlin Trevane, but not I. He befriended me. We began to exchange knowledge and lore, to push each other, to see what we could do. He told me of the scrying glass, and before long he offered to help me get it if I would teach him the art of voice first.
"The scrying glass?"
Jesse repeated. "Aye." He smiled bitterly. Lucan lied about what it was. He said 'twas used to foretell the future and find a tale, that with it one could alter certain events before they ever happened. 'Twas an enticing power to me, especially since I'd begun to wonder what my own life held. I'd begun to doubt that there was a Keltar mate for me. After all, I was nigh 80, quite old for a man to have never been wed in my century.
A Keltar mate?
'Tis legend that there is one true mate for each Keltar druid, his perfect match, his other half, the one who completes him with her love. If he finds her, they can exchange the druid binding vows and bind their souls together for all time, through whatever is to come, beyond death, unto eternity. He paused briefly, his gaze turning inward. If, however, he murmured, only one of them takes the vow, only that one will be forever bound. The other remains free to love another, if he or she so chooses. Jessie's breath caught in her throat.
How does the Keltar druid recognize his mate? Am I yours?
She wanted desperately to ask. But there was no way she was asking, because if he said no, it might just kill her. Then his last comment penetrated.
Wait a minute. Do you mean that if only one of them takes the vow, that person's heart is forever bound to another person who might never love them back? Not just in this life, but through all eternity?
Aye, he said softly.
But that would be awful,
she exclaimed. He shrugged.
'Twould depend on the circumstances. Mayhap one might think it a gift.
He resumed his tale briskly.
I agreed to the bargain. I taught him voice, and we rode out one morning for a village in Ireland, where the dark glass was being guarded in the center of a veritable fortress by 12 holy men and a band of warriors 1,000 strong. Trevane had given me an ancient sleep spell to employ upon our approach. Our plan was to render the guards unconscious, ride in and take the mirror, then ride out again. I saw no reason to distrust him. He demonstrated the spell several times himself, and it had merely made the subject slip into a deep slumber. He deferred the task to me because he wasn't strong enough to affect the entire village, and I was. I'd done my best to teach him, but he simply wasn't good enough at voice to compel more than a handful of people in the same room with him. Though the art of it can be taught, the power that infuses it is something a man is either born with or not. His power lay in other areas.
Oh, God,
Jesse breathed.
Tell me this isn't going where I think it is.
He nodded, his gaze distant, far away and long ago, in 9th century Ireland.
It caused only slumber when Lucan used it, only because he lacked the power to invoke the spell of death. I didn't. Though I didn't know it, along with all the other talents with which I'd been born, was a horrific one that appeared so rarely in our bloodline that I'd never given it any thought. I believed 'twas a sleep spell I'd worked, right up until that final moment I knelt in the inner chamber beside the dark glass and touched the holy man who lay sprawled on the floor. I think he'd tried to break the glass rather than let it be taken, but my spell had been too potent, too quick. He was dead. And as I sat there, even then not fully comprehending that I'd been betrayed, not able to fathom what Lucan might be after, he wove the dark binding spell around me. He had the chant, the gold, the man to ensorcel, and I just spilled the blood of innocence for him. The next thing I knew, I was looking out at Lucan from inside the dark glass. As we left the village, he gave me a view to ensure I saw what I'd done. With one spell, I'd killed not only those guarding the glass, but the entire village of Capscorth. Men, women and children, all dead where they'd been standing. Hundreds upon hundreds of them, lying in the streets as if a plague had ripped through their world. I was that plague. He closed his eyes, as if trying to shut out the terrible vision he'd seen that day.
But you didn't mean to,
Jessie defended. Damn Lucan, she knew Kian. Somewhere inside him he bore the weight of each and every life he'd taken so long ago.
It's not like you rode in there intending to kill anyone.
He opened his eyes and smiled faintly.
I can it, lass, he said. And in truth, I no longer hate myself for what transpired that day. There are things a man can change, and there are things a man lives with. I live with it.
He cupped her face and gazed into her eyes.
But what I cannot live with is putting into Lucan Trevane's hands the kind of power that would make him unstoppable. 'Twas a village then. With the Dark Book, he could destroy entire cities, even a world. Only my death can prevent that.
He paused.
Sweet Jessica, you must cry peace with this, as must I. I have no choice.
I can't,
she cried, shaking her head, blinking back tears.
You can't expect me to.
Lass, you must promise me something, he said, his voice low and urgent. I've been thinking much on this. I do not want you there when the time comes.
Jessie felt as if she'd been punched in the stomach. She opened her mouth, but nothing came out. She deliberately refused to let herself think that far ahead, to let her mind linger over the details of the night it would actually happen, to the night she would stand before a mirror and watch her Highlander age more than 1,000 years in a single moment and disintegrate into a pile of dust.
We'll spend what time I can be free together that day. Then you will go elsewhere with the others. Promise me this, he pushed. Drustan has pledged to break the mirror once it's done, so none can ever be taken captive again.
That's not fair, Kian, you can't.
I can, and am. 'Tis a dying man's last request, he said roughly. I want you to remember me as a man, lass, as your man, not as a prisoner of dark magics. I do not want you to watch me die. Promise me you won't, Jessica. Promise me, and mean it.
Jessie was no longer able to hold the tears at bay. Hot and wet, they scalded her cheeks. As she stared at him through the tears, a lifetime of hopes and dreams, of wishes and desires, of love and family and children she would never get to have, flashed before her mind's eye. It was too much. When she spoke again, her voice was low and fervent.
I promise you, Kian McKelter, that I will not watch you die.
When he drew her into his arms to kiss her, she closed her eyes and counted her blessings for the privacy of a steel-plated mind. For though she'd pledged him the promise he'd sought, she'd not meant what he'd meant by it at all. Chapter 27 Samhain 29 minutes to midnight.
That's it, Jessica. The wards are down. You ken what that means.
Taking a slow, deep breath, Jessie nodded.
Yes,
she replied softly.
Lucan will be able to enter the castle now, but he won't be able to use sorcery.
Dunna make the mistake of thinking you're safe from him, lass. He can still harm you in the way of any man. I want you to wear this.
He fastened a sheath snugly to her forearm, then slipped a plain-handled dirk into it, tip to her elbow, handle at her wrist.
Don your sweater over it.
She obeyed tensely. Do this. He made a twisting motion with his hand.
Drop it down.
She mimicked his movement, surprised by how well it worked, smoothly guiding the handle into her palm. He helped her resheathe it.
He's desperate, Jessica. 'Tis the only reason he's agreed to this. Do not think he's truly agreed to it. Expect deceit. Expect last-minute treachery. It will come.
She glanced up at him sharply. There'd been a strange certainty in his voice when he'd said the last. It will come. As if he knew something she didn't.
But you said yesterday that you thought he would pass the tie through the glass and go away.
She protested anxiously.
You said you thought he'd focus on finding the dark book before he would come back and try to take the mirror from the Keltar. That's the whole point, isn't it? To buy a little more time, right?
He stared down at her a long, pensive moment.
I'm but advising you to be on constant guard, lass. Constant,
he repeated.
Watch yourself. Do not let your defenses down for even a second. You've no way of knowing what might happen from one moment to the next. Remember that. Be prepared for anything. Anything.
You're starting to worry me. What do you think?
Hush, lass. He cut her off. I must go. Time is short, and we do not wish him to see me. He believes you act alone. He must continue to believe that. But do not fear. I will be watching over you.
Halfway down the corridor, he turned back.
Constant guard, lass,
he hissed. Jessie swallowed. She tensed her wrist, feeling the weight of the blade.
Constant guard, Dagus,
she echoed.
I promise.
20 minutes to midnight. Jessie shivered as she hurried down the corridor. 5 days ago, when she'd promised Kian that she wouldn't watch him die, she'd possessed great determination, but little hope. Later that night, however, her circumstances had changed drastically. After the mirror had reclaimed Kian, she'd left the silver chamber and hastened to the library to open communications with Lucan. She'd been sitting at the computer, her inbox open, about to click on one of his emails, when Dagus had stepped from behind the drapes, catching her in the act. He'd told her he'd been in the library a few nights ago, and knew she'd been receiving emails from Trevane. As she'd gaped up at him, half expecting to be dragged off to some medieval dungeon for punishment, he'd further shocked her by saying,
"How bad do you want him to live, lass?"
Figuring she had nothing left to lose at that point, she'd told him in no uncertain terms,
"I'd do anything, even make him hate me."
"He won't hate you, lass,"
Dagus had assured her.
"If aught, he'll hate me."
She was counting on that. Not that he would hate Dagus, but that he would eventually forgive her for helping his enemy pass the tithe through to keep him alive.
"I thought you said you didn't know of any way to free him. Why would you do this?"
"Why would you?"
he countered.
"Because I believe there has to be a way to get him out of there. That we just need a little more time to find it."
"I believe there's a way to get him out of there too, lass,"
he'd replied after a brief pause.
"Really?"
Her heart had soared at those words. It was one thing for her to believe it. She was desperate enough to cling to any hope, and she knew it. But if a Keltar druid believed it, it was more than just possible. It was probable. No, it was an eventual certainty. There was no way Dagus and Drustin would run the risk of Trevane ever getting the Dark Book, which meant they had to be convinced they could ultimately free Kian, and reasonably quickly after the tithe was paid. It had been nearly impossible to conceal her change in spirits from Kian, especially today, on what he'd thought was their last day together. But she'd managed. Dagus had been insistent she discuss their plans with no one, even going so far as to say he wouldn't help her at all if she failed to convince Kian that she believed tonight was his last night alive.
"He believes 'tis the only way, lass," Dagus had warned. "I fear he will become difficult if he suspects we plan to stop him."
Though acting the part had nearly killed her, thank God she'd not had to actually live it, she'd been convincing, unwilling to jeopardize her only chance to save him.
Email Trevane.
Dagus had instructed her that night.
Tell him you'll help him get in the castle to pass the tithe through. But the Keltar keep the mirror.
She'd done it. At first, Trevane had refused, offering myriad alternatives, all of which she'd rejected at Dagus's behest. But late last night, 24 hours from the 0 hour to the minute, Trevane had finally agreed. And now, Jesse paused at the back door, inhaling sharply. He was here, making her skin crawl. She could feel him through the wood of the door, cold, dark, rotten, and much, much too close for comfort. And about to get closer. He'd accepted her deal only when she'd pledged herself as his hostage.
You must let me use you to get in and out of the castle.
Eyes wide, she'd stared up at Dagus. Nostrils flaring, he'd shaken his head curtly. But the dark sorcerer had refused to come onto Keltar-warded land any other way, and Dagus had finally nodded.
How do I know this isn't a trap?
Trevane had typed.
How do I?
She'd countered. There'd not been much to say after that. It had been the bottom line, really. They were both risking all, and they knew it. She glanced at her watch. It was 18 minutes to midnight. Dagus had been adamant they give Trevane barely enough time to get to the mirror and pass the tithe through.
I do not want him to have a single moment with you during which he doesn't have to keep moving. Once it's over, I'll show myself, and we'll get him out of the castle.
It was now or never. She braced herself for Trevane's hideous appearance. Whatever happened from this moment forth, she would betray no fear, no weakness. She was Jessica McKelter, wife of Kian, and she would do him proud. The bastard she was about to let in Castle Keltar had held her husband imprisoned for 1133 years, and though she'd never thought herself a violent person, she'd plunge her concealed dagger into Trevane's heart in an instant if she thought she had a snowball's chance in hell of killing him. She slid the deadbolt back and turned the doorknob.
Lucan,
she said coolly, inclining her head.
Good evening, Jessica.
Trevane replied with a cordial smile. Sort of. When he took her arm, Jesse barely suppressed her revulsion. Dagus stood in the shadows of the corridor off the balustrade that overlooked the great hall, listening intently. Upon leaving Jessica, he'd loped up the back stairs, taking turn after turn, wending a circuitous route to his current position, all to avoid passing Kian's mirror. His brother, Gwyn, and Chloe were safely ensconced in a chamber 2 corridors down. Until a few hours ago, he'd had to conceal his plans from even them, so none could inadvertently betray it to Kian by thinking about it in their powerful ancestor's presence.
"'Tis too dangerous!'
Druston had growled.
"'Tis the only way, brother,'
he'd replied.
"'The Dragaar knew this for a certainty!'
"'Aye.'
"'Too many things could go awry, Dagus! You have no way of controlling what happens!'
Dagus hadn't bothered arguing. It was a long shot, and he knew it. He was doing little more than setting the stage and hoping his instincts about the actors involved would prove true. Druston had been reluctant to agree, until Dagus had assured him that no matter what happened, Trevane would not pass the tithe through, that he would stop him himself if necessary, but not until the last possible second, he'd added in the privacy of his mind. A few dozen yards away, mounted on the wall of the landing, high above the great hall, hung the unseely dark glass. It was flat silver. He imagined his ancestor inside it. Was Kian stretched out on his stone floor, arms behind his head, staring up at the stone ceiling, waiting for death? If so, he knew the mere waiting was killing his ancestor 1,000 times over. 'Twasn't in a Keltar's blood to accept death, especially not once he'd found his mate and given the binding vows. Dagus knew. He'd been in far too similar a position himself. Indeed, it was the similarity in their positions that had given him this idea to begin with. He glanced at his watch. 15 minutes to midnight.
"Expect deceit,"
he'd told Jessica,
expect last-minute treachery. It will come.
What he'd not told her was that 'twould come not from Lucan, but from him. Kian had been listening to the clock in the great hall below him chime the passing hours all evening. 'Twas now but mere minutes to midnight, and he was as prepared as he would ever be to draw his final breaths. He'd conjured a perfect mental vision of Jessica's face in his mind hours ago, and he intended to die holding it there. It was jarred slightly by the sound of approaching footsteps. She'd promised not to watch, he'd thought, stiffening. Then he jerked ramrod straight and pushed up from the floor as another sound reached his disbelieving ears. The hated sound of Lucan Trevane's laughter. Nay, 'twas not possible. There was no way the bastard could get inside Castle Keltar, not without someone helping.
Oh, Christ! Nay, lass! He whispered. Tell me you wouldn't. Tell me you didn't.
But he didn't need to seek visual confirmation of what he'd just heard to know she had. And the truth was, he couldn't blame her. He'd not have let her die, either. He'd have moved mountains. He'd have battled God or devil for his wife's life. She'd betrayed him. He smiled faintly. And in so doing, she'd honored him beyond measure. His Jessica loved him enough to break all the rules for him, enough to damn the whole world just to save him. He'd have done no less for her. He'd have kept her alive by any means possible.
Highlander!
Trevane's voice rang out triumphantly in the great hall.
You're mine for another century!
His smile faded. Unfortunately, her actions changed nothing.
Over my dead body, he murmured,
which, as he'd always known, was the only way. Jessie gazed up at the landing, high above the hall, where for the past 2 weeks she'd slept every night unless Kian had been free to sleep in a bed with her. Framed in the mirror, he stared down at her as she stood arm in arm with his enemy. He closed his eyes briefly, as if trying to cleanse the image from his vision. Then he said softly,
"Call me out, lass. You do no wish to do this. You must let me stop him."
Jessie glanced at the tall grandfather clock in the alcove to the left of the staircase. 5 minutes to midnight. Biting her lip, she shook her head.
"Jessica, you're not just keeping me alive. You're letting him live. We've been through this. You must summon me out."
Spine straight with resolve, she shook her head again. When the mirror blazed brilliantly and the hall was suddenly skewed by that odd sense of spatial distortion, for a moment Jessie simply couldn't make sense of it. Then Dagus stepped from the shadows behind the balustrade, and she realized he must have murmured the chant to release Kian, the chant she herself had told him that first night in the library, softly enough that only Kian had been able to hear. But why?
"Dagus, why did you— Oh!"
she cried. He was moving protectively toward the dark glass, making his intentions all too clear. She was too stunned by Dagus's betrayal to register the danger she was in until it was too late. Lucan dropped a silken cord over her head and had it cinched tightly around the slender column of her throat, the choke handles twisted before she even knew what he was doing.
"You son of a bitch, let her go!"
Kian roared, bursting from the mirror. Rather than releasing her, Lucan turned the choke handles just a bit. Jessica went stiff and still. She understood the use of those handles. She was familiar with the garrote as an ancient weapon. One twist, and she was dead. She didn't dare move, even the few inches necessary to try to use the dagger Dagus had given her.
"Expect anything," he'd said.
Now, she thought bitterly, she knew why. 3 minutes to midnight. Lucan had his wife hostage, a garrote about her neck.
"Get back in the mirror, Highlander. Return to it willingly, and I'll let her live. Move. Now!"
Kian stretched his senses. He should have felt it earlier, but he'd had no reason to suspect anything. Aye, the wards barring Lucan from the castle were down. but the wards preventing Lucan from using sorcery were still up, which meant Kian could use a spell on the bastard and Lucan wouldn't be able to counter it. He opened his mouth, and just as he did, Lucan hissed, "Say one word in sorcerer's tongue, and she's dead. I won't give you the chance to bespell me. If I hear one wrong syllable, I'll snap her neck." Kian closed his mouth, a muscle working in his jaw. "And that goes for you too," he barked at Dagus. "Either of you start a spell, and she dies. Get back in the glass, Kaltar. Now, I'm coming up to pass the tithe through." Centuries of hatred and fury filled Kian as he stared down at the man who'd stolen his life so long ago and was now threatening his woman. Vengeance. 'Twas what he'd lived and breathed for so long, he'd nearly lost his own humanity. Till his fiery, passionate Jessica had come along. Once he'd hungered for nothing more than to see Lucan Trevane dead, no matter the cost. In truth, it hadn't been so many days ago that he'd hungered for it above all else. 26 days ago, to be exact. Now, staring down at his ancient enemy holding his woman captive, something inside him changed. He no longer cared if Lucan lived or died. All that mattered was getting the bastard's hands off his wife long enough to save her. Nothing else. Just that his woman live. That she see another dawn. Be granted another day. She was his light. His truth. His highest aspiration. Love for her filled him so completely that, in the space between one heartbeat and the next, 11 centuries of hatred and lust for vengeance were burned out of him as if they'd never been. Trevane was no longer his problem. Only Jessica was. A quiet resolve, an unexpected serenity filled him, unlike anything he'd ever felt before.
"I would have bargained with the devil for you too, lass," he said softly. "I'd have done anything too. I love you, Jessica. You are my one true mate, lass. Never forget that."
"Back in the glass, Highlander!" Lucan snarled. "Or she dies. I mean it now!"
"You want to pass the tithe through, Lucan? Fine. Be my guest. I won't stop you."
In one smooth, fluid motion, he turned, lifted the mirror from the wall, spun about, and tossed it into the air, casting it end over end, out and over 50-odd stairs, down to the hard marble floor below. Catch. For the second time in her life, events unfolded for Jessie as if in slow motion. With Kian's admission that she was his one true mate ringing in her ears, she watched the only thing that could keep him alive plummet to virtually certain destruction. She knew why he'd done it. To save her. Trevane could not both hold her and go after the mirror. Kian had forced him to choose. Her husband knew his ancient enemy well. Of course he'd go after the mirror. Survive now, live to kill another day. The rope slackened around her neck as Lucan released the handles and lunged forward. She tugged the garrote from her throat and dropped it to the floor, watching, heart pounding. If, by some miracle, Lucan managed to actually catch the man-sized looking glass, she wouldn't be surprised if the ancient mirror shattered merely from the impact of him stopping its fall. Eyes huge, she tipped her head back and up. Kian stood at the top of the stairs, staring down at her. Love blazed in his eyes so fiercely, so intensely, that it took her breath away. She stared up at him, drinking him in. She knew she'd never make it up the stairs in time to touch him, to hold him, to kiss him just one last time. Lucan was almost beneath the glass. Almost. She caught her breath and held it. Miracles sometimes happened. Maybe he'd reach it, shove the tithe through, and they'd all live to fight another day. Mere inches from Lucan's outstretched hands, the mirror crashed to the floor. One corner of the ornate golden frame struck marble with the sharp report of a gunshot. The dark glass shattered into thousands of silvery, tinkling pieces. To Jessie, It seemed as if the entire universe froze but for those glittering shards of silver cascading across the floor. Her husband's life lay in those pieces. When the clock began chiming the midnight hour, her pent breath exploded from her lungs on a soft sob. 1, 2. She raised her gaze from the floor, stared up at Kian. The dark glass was broken now, beyond repair. The tithe could never be paid again. She'd lost him. 3, 4. Dimly, she was aware of Lucan, frozen, looking all too humanly bewildered, standing next to the twisted frame in the midst of the shattered glass. 5, 6. She felt the same, bewildered, disbelieving, devastated. She'd begun the day with so much hope, only to end it with none. Dimly, she was aware that the other McKelter had, at some point, joined Dagus behind the balustrade, and everyone seemed rooted to the ground, transfixed by the scene before them. 7, 8. There was a silent request in her husband's eyes. She knew what it was. She'd promised not to watch him die, to remember him as her man, not a prisoner of dark magics. 9. It was a promise she'd always meant to keep. Just not this way. Dear God, just not this way.
I love you, Kian,
she cried. 10, 11. Her promise kept was all she had left to give him. Tears spilled down her cheeks when she squeezed her eyes shut. 12. Chapter 28. It was Lucan's laughter, after the 12th chime, that made her eyes snap open again. Jesse gaped blankly at the dark sorcerer who was still, mystifyingly, standing there. Then up to the landing beyond. Her heart lodged in her throat. Kian was still there, too. How could that be? The glass was shattered. It was after midnight on Samhain, and the tithe hadn't been paid. They should both be dead. They should be dust, little piles of it. Why weren't they? Not that she wanted them to be, at least not one of them.
Oh, God,
Jesse breathed.
Who cares? You're still there. Oh, God, Kian!
Inhaling sharply, she broke into a sprint for the stairs, for her beloved, living, breathing husband.
Jessica, love, watch out!
Kian roared. Lucan had spun around and was heading straight for her, slipping and sliding over slivers of glass.
Blether in hell, Kian, he's mortal now!
Dagus roared.
Do not kill him! We need to know where the dark book is!
But his warning came too late, for both of them. As Lucan lunged for her, she slid the blade that Dagus had given her down her sleeve into her palm. She raised her hands to fend him off, and the blade slid into the front of Lucan's chest at the same moment the tip of a jeweled dirk pierced through him from behind, driven straight through his heart by the force of Kian's throw. Then she was backpedaling away from the falling sorcerer, and Kian was racing down the stairs toward her and taking her in his arms, turning her away from the gruesome sight. She heard Dagus shouting down at Lucan.
Where's the dark book, Trevane? Blethering hell, tell us what you know of it!
Lucan Trevane whispered,
Fuck you, Keltar!
And died.
Oh my God, you're alive! I can't believe you're alive!
Jessie couldn't seem to stop saying, nor could she stop touching Kian, kissing him frantically, desperate to assure herself he was really there and wasn't going to disappear or turn to dust at any moment.
Aye, love, I'm alive.
A string of curses spilled from his lips, and he scowled down at her.
You tried to barter with the devil himself for me, you crazy woman! Bloody hell, dunna you ever risk your life for mine, ever! Do you hear me?
Burying his hands in her dark curls, he pulled her against him, slanted his mouth over hers, and kissed her hungrily.
You would have done the same for me,
she said breathlessly, when he let her breathe again. As a matter of fact, he'd said so much on the day of their wedding. Should death come anon, he'd said, 'twill be my life for yours. So what if he'd refused to let her say the same? She made identical promises in her heart. I am given.
Not the point, he growled. 'Tis what a man does for his mate.
His mate. Jesse stared up at him, a sudden, stunning realization dawning.
Oh, the wedding vows you said that day were the binding vows you told me about, weren't they? You gave me the binding vows and you wouldn't let me give them back, didn't you?
She thumped him in the chest with her palm.
You tricked me!
I refuse to let you be bound to a dead man, lass, he said grimly. Nor was I willing to miss the chance to pledge my heart to you forever, even if it meant I would have to be reborn again and again, and serve as naught but your protector from afar, while you loved another. To ken you were alive and well would have been enough.
He paused a moment.
Not that I wouldn't have done all in my power to steal your heart from whoever the bloody bastard was, he added in a fierce growl. I would have.
Tears of joy misted her eyes, and she laughed aloud. Oh, yes, she could see her ferocious Highlander doing battle for her heart. He'd easily have won it in any lifetime.
But you didn't die, so don't try to stop me now, she said softly,
taking his hand and putting it over her heart, pressing her palm to his. Speaking with quiet reverence, she echoed the words he'd given her that day in the chapel. The moment the vow was said, the final pledge echoing in the stone hall, emotion crashed over her so intensely her knees buckled. Love for him filled every ounce of her being. It was the most incredible sensation she'd ever felt. They were inextricably linked now, for all eternity. Kian caught her and crushed his mouth to hers, kissing her passionately. She clung to him, savoring the strength of his hard, powerful body against hers, the raw, carnal heat of his kiss.
"Oh, wait a minute,"
she said, frowning up at him a few minutes later.
"How are you still alive? I don't get it. What just happened?"
It was Dagus who replied. While she and Kian had been otherwise occupied, he and the other McKeltars had hurried down the stairs and joined them in the Great Hall. Now he guided them all away from the fallen sorcerer, and the three couples moved to stand near one of the hearths.
"I didn't quite tell you the truth, lass," he said. "The truth was, we could find no way to free him. Our only hope lay in trying to void the Unseelie indenture. The Dragaar believed that, much as a Seelie compact can be voided by an evil deed, an Unseelie compact could be voided by a selfless act. Not broken, breached, nor violated. Voided. Both parties released from the binding and returned to their normal state."
"Believed?" Druston exclaimed. "You told me they knew."
"They believed it very strongly,"
Dagus amended hastily, slipping an arm around his wife and drawing her close.
"Wait a minute,"
Chloe protested.
"Wouldn't the fact that Kian had been willing to die to stop Lucan from getting the Dark Book have counted as a selfless act?"
"Nay," Dagus said. "A selfless act cannot be tainted by personal motive. Kian was driven for centuries by hunger for vengeance. 'Twas in his voice every time he spoke of Lucan, of dying in order to kill him."
Kian nodded.
"Aye, 'tis true. I didn't want to die. I never wanted to die. I wanted Lucan dead, and there was only one way I could accomplish it. Though I wanted to keep him from getting the Dark Book, I hungered for revenge even more."
"But he was ready to die for you, Jessica,"
Dagus told her softly. "'Twas what I was wagering on, that he would die for you selflessly. At the moment he threw that mirror, there was no thought of vengeance in his heart at all. There was only that desperate, pure self-sacrifice of unconditional love, and it voided the dark indenture."
"You had no way of knowing 'twould work,"
Kian growled.
"You're right, I didn't. But I was once in a like position, Kensman."
Dagus gazed down at Chloe.
"I thought it safe to wager on your feelings for your mate."
"You shaved it damn close. Mere seconds."
Dagus arched a brow at Kian's rebuke.
"'Twas our only hope.
You placed my woman in danger.
At least you have her, Dagus pointed out. Christ, dunna be tripping all over yourself trying to thank me for saving you, kinsman.
You didn't save him. Eternal physicist and human calculator of odds, Gwyn pointed out matter-of-factly. Not really, you just set up the circumstances. He saved himself.
Oh, bloody good thing I didn't do this for thanks, Dagus said dryly.
Don't be looking to me for thanks, you put us all at risk, said Druston.
I'll thank you, Dagus, Jesse said fervently. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'll thank you 100 times a day for the rest of your life if you want me to. And I'm sorry I hated you there for a minute when I thought you'd betrayed me.
Dagus nodded.
You're welcome, lass. Though you might have kept the hate in me part to yourself.
Chloe beamed up at her husband.
I'll thank you, too. I think you did a brilliant job of setting up circumstances, Dagus.
He dropped a kiss on her nose. Chloe was his greatest fan, as he was hers, and would always be.
"Speaking of setting up circumstances," Druston said slowly, "I've had the oddest feeling since the two of you arrived at Castle Keltar. Verily, I've felt it a few times prior to your arrival, too, almost as if—nay, 'tis foolish."
He shook his head.
"What, brother?"
Dagus asked. Druston rubbed his jaw, frowning.
"'Tis probably not. But I've been suffering the strangest feeling that there's more going on around Castle Keltar of late than meets the eye. Has no one else been feeling this?"
"I can't speak for Castle Keltar, Druston, but I think I know what you mean,"
Jesse said.
"I've felt it a few times lately, too. There's been this word on the tip of my tongue since this all began. I keep getting close to it, but it's the darndest thing. Just when I think I have it, it melts away."
Her brow furrowed, and she was silent a long moment. Then,
"Aha! I think I've got it," she exclaimed. "Is this what you mean? Synchronicity,"
Queen Avil of the Tuahade Dana murmured, her iridescent eyes shimmering. A collision of possibles so incalculably improbable that it would appear to imply divine intervention. The corners of her lips lifted in a faint smile. She smoothed them. She'd been employing a mortal form so much of late that she was beginning to mimic their expressions. Humans were forever attributing the meddling of the Fae to the divine, as well they should, for handling so many threads, subtly altering the weft and weck of the world truly required something of the divine. They were here now, her players, her pieces on the board, more than pawns, less than kings. The catastrophe that had occurred in the 17th century hadn't taken place after all, not since she'd rearranged events to get the Keltar's underground chamber sealed. The one in the 20th century hadn't come to fruition either, for the same reason. Nor had the other two, though for different reasons.
"Jadub,"
she whispered.
"I touch. I adjust."
7 times now she'd prevented the extinction of the purest and most potent of the druid lines, and positioned the 5 most powerful druids that had ever lived precisely where she wanted them, where they could ally her, where they could save her. There was Dagus, possessing far more knowledge than any one druid should have. All the knowledge of the Dragaar, the 13 ancients, the memories she'd left in him were doing things to him he wasn't admitting. Not to Druston, not to his mate. There was Kian, possessing far more power than any one druid should have. The genetic fluke, the unexpected mutation born once in a bloodline. The things Dagus and Kian could do together if they put their minds to it worried even her. Then there was Druston, compared to his dangerously endowed kin, modest of power, modest of knowledge, yet superior in a way they could never be. Dagus and Kian could go either way, good or evil. Druston McKelter was that unique kind of man whose name lived forever in legends of men. a warrior so pure of heart that he was beyond corrupting, a man who would die for his beliefs, not just once, but 10,000 times over if necessary. As for her other two chosen, she would be seeing them soon. Below her, in Castle Keltar's great hall, the humans stood talking, oblivious to her presence, blissfully unaware that a little over 5 years in their future, their world was in chaos, the walls between man and fairy were down, and the Unseelie ruled with an icy, brutal hand. The shades were feeding again, the hunters were enforcing compliance, calling death sentences for the slightest infraction, and the exquisite Unseelie princes were indulging their insatiable appetite for mortal women, brutally raping, leaving mindless shells. And she? Ah, that was the problem. Her gaze shifted inward from the tableau below. Though her race could move at will through the past, they could not penetrate a future that had not yet occurred. If one attempted to go forward beyond one's present existence, one encountered an oppressive white mist, nothing more. If one went too far back in the past, one encountered the same mist. Not even the Tuatha De Danann understood time. They knew how to traverse only the simplest facet of it. She'd sifted back countless times now, from 5.5 years in Earth's future, her present, delicately altering events while trying not to change too much, concealing from all, even those of her own court, that she was temporally displaced while doing it. Worlds were fragile. One could destroy an entire planet inadvertently. She already carried the weight of such an error. It was a heavy burden. As did her long-ago consort, though the unfathomably ancient Dark King cared nothing about the blood of billions. She'd been alive for over 60,000 years. Many of her kind wearied of existence long before that. Not she. She had no wish to cease. Though the loss of Adam Black to his mortal mate grieved her, and she'd considered undoing that as well, she'd learned that there was a human element that was highly dangerous to meddle with. Love's power was violently unpredictable. It affected events in ways her Tuatha De mind had failed to anticipate on more than one occasion. She could not hope to predict what she could not understand. There were times when she suspected human love harbored a power more elemental and greater than any her race possessed. It infused things with strength in impossible excess of the sum of its parts. Indeed, it had been the matching of each Keltar below with his mate that had tempered them, given them cores of steel, and made her druids into allies worthy of a queen. The room below fell into a sudden hush. The silence drew her gaze back to the small group of men and women. Dagus, Chloe, Drustin, Gwen, and Jessica were all staring at Kian, who had a startled expression on his face and was gazing directly up at her where she stood beyond the balustrade. She stiffened. Impossible! She wasn't even truly there, but a projection of herself, concealed by countless layers of illusion, beyond an impenetrable fey veil. Not even the most adept of she-seers would be able to isolate her formless form within the dimensional deception she'd created. Ah, yes. This druid had power beyond any other.
"What is it, Kian?"
Drustin said, glancing over his shoulder in the direction Kian was looking.
"Is aught amiss? Do you see something, kinsman?"
Avil stared at the Highlander, her lips tightening. She smoothed them again, waited for him to betray her presence. No, it was not time yet. It could too drastically alter things. It could destroy what chance they had. She'd attained a tenuous balance of possibles at best. She needed more time. She held his gaze, used her human eyes to convey a mute plea.
"Say nothing, Keltar mine."
The 9th-century Highlander regarded her silently. After a moment, he inclined his head in the barest nod, then turned and glanced at Drustin.
"Nay," he said, "'tis nothing, Drustin. Nothing at all."
We hope that you have enjoyed our presentation of Spell of the Highlander by Karen Marie Monning. Copyright 2005 by Karen Marie Monning. Read by Phil Giganti. Directed by Laura Grafton. Engineered by Laura Stahl. Performance copyright 2008 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brilliancedaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.